Cool. Are we actually live? We should do it like more dramatic. Hang on.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming. We really appreciate you all so much. We are the Scotts. I'm Scott Hanselman, my boss, Scott Hunter. You may have heard we are the Lesser Scotts. Scott Guthrie is one of the Scots. There's about six or seven Scots.
There's more than that.
There's more?
There's lots of Scots.
Do you want to tell them your secret? I'll tell them.
No.
His name isn't Scott. He changed his name for a promotion.
Yes.
And frankly, it's unacceptable.
Scott's my middle name, so.
Yeah, it's horrible. Cool.
Talk about what we work on.
Oh, what do we work on? We work on that.
Oh, yeah, ASP.NET 5.
ASP.NET 5. Cool. So this is an intro to ASP.NET 5. This is an intro. I know that you all like it technical. We'll try to be as technical as we can, but it is still an intro talk. We're going to be doing a deep dive a little bit later, I think tomorrow.
There'll be more code and more stuff in that deep dive than in
this
session.
Yes, more code and more things in that one. This is more kind of context setting, although we do have some different things set up and a couple of demos. So this will be good, but we also want to give you an understanding about why we are doing this. I'm going to let you run the slides here.
Sure.
So this is a lovely news article about Microsoft planning to open source .NET. Do you notice the date? Here, I'm... ...2001. We've done this before. We've open sourced this thing before. This was called Shared Source. The code name was Rotor, R-O-T-O-R, Rotor. This was when we gave .NET out to... there's a camera following me. See? Professional. This is when we gave .NET out to the academic community. This was shared source. We didn't call it open source, though. I would think in 2001...
It was a shared... Yeah,
saying the word open
term.
Source was kind of a dirty word you wouldn't use at Microsoft.
Yes, not good.
And interestingly, I got to speak to one of the gentlemen who worked on this particular project, and I was saying, aren't you excited that we're open sourcing .NET? And he said, yes, I hope this time it actually takes... Because we've done this a couple of different times. We did shared source as academic. Then we did the reference source. If you go to sourceof.net, www.sourceof.net, it's a really cool site. You can see all of the source code. Now that is actually happening. So then here, the register is reporting that, and they're being a little bit mean because they're the register. It'll be different this time, honest.
A funny true story is I'm sitting in a room with a .NET team a couple months ago. And some of the guys have been around since these early efforts, and they were telling me, oh, really? Finally, we're going to really do it? We've done it four times already internally. Yeah. It's actually happened internally a couple times, and it never actually bubbled out of the company. So this is the finally real.
So when they're being mean to us here, and they're saying it'll be different this time, honest, you know, there's historical context for them to be a little bit salty. But why is this different? Why is this time different?
We're more open now.
We've got the legal on our side.
Yeah, so Microsoft has changed. The reality is, you know, we were just having a chat online just a few minutes ago, and legal's changed. Legal actually supports us trying to do these things. The company's changed. You see, you know, Office running on iPads and Android and Windows. Mm-hmm. Microsoft of today is trying to get our technology in front of as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. And we think that doing this enables us as a company to do that. And so that's why we're doing the cross-platform. That's why we're doing the open source. I'm a web guy, and I don't think I can compete unless I'm actually where everybody else is.
How do we know that we're not trying to do something evil?
We're not.
All right. You heard it here. That was really the answer, isn't it?
You go to GitHub, download the whole thing.
Yeah.
How can there be any evil there? If you want, copy the whole thing, fork the thing, make your own version of it, and you can have your own version of .NET.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about how open source .NET is doing. This is a really cool diagram here. This actually, I think, is even a little bit out of date because I have to go and update this slide every time we talk about it. We've got upwards of 6,000 forks of .NET open source. We've got 1,000 plus pull requests from the community. And 25,000 stars. Stars don't mean anything. You can't buy anything with them, but they're still kind of cool. But this chart is really, really interesting. And actually, I'm going to face like this. I can only face one way with the big camera right there, and it doesn't work. 20%. Go back, dude. What's wrong with you? 20% of the contributions are coming from outside of Microsoft. This is really, really significant. And it's also nice to see that about 11% are multiple pull requests. It's not just little stuff. It's not just unit tests. It's not just spell check. People are getting actually engaged. And they're doing really significant stuff. They're making it run on Mac, and they're porting it to FreeBSD, and they're doing this kind of on their own as little strike teams.
Right.
Yeah, it's nice. Now, this chart is interesting. Not just because it's a chart, and I like to show charts, but because here we've got six different open source projects. But it's clear that there's two clusters of things that are going on here. First, we've got Roslyn, CoreFX, and the CoreCLR. That's the compiler, the libraries, and the runtime. And you can see that the community growth, the contribution growth, is like this, just rocket ship. But then you've got MVC, Entity Framework, and the .NET execution environment. Entity Framework and MVC have been open source for a while, and their growth is not quite so rocket ship. Why? Why do you think that is? Anyone want to just yell out, why do you think that is? It's clearly clustered like that, and there's a very clear reason, I think. Any guesses? No.
I'm going to guess that it's because MVC and Entity Framework and stuff have been open and around for a while, but .NET Core is brand new, and people want to try to port it to all the crazy things they want to put it on.
I think the porting part is right. The part about them being brand new isn't because this is months since inception. I think it's because of the computer science aspect of things. Compilers are fun, and plumbing is fun, and Core Framework and CoreCLR, like you said, porting it is an adventure. Let's get this thing to run
porting
on a Raspberry Pi. But things like MVC, it's a web framework, and it's text boxes over data.
No, it makes strings.
It's stuff that makes strings. That's somehow less interesting.
It's a string generator.
Right. So I think we're seeing a lot of computer science people, a lot of university people, a lot of people who are excited about academia getting involved in the practical future of that. But that growth is astronomical, which is something to be proud of. Now, this one here, I said before that I have to keep updating these things. Here we've got almost 12,000 forks up at .net.github.io. I updated it a couple of days ago. And now we're looking at 20,000 forks. We've got almost 200 repositories. Do me a favor and click on that link there on the slide. .net.github.io is not an exactly obvious URL, but it's a useful one that you should memorize and you should bookmark. This is all the different repos, all the different repositories of all the different stuff. Do me a favor and hover over one of those. Like, let's hover over Orchard there. There's a free open source community content management system. You hover over it, you can see the forks, the contributors, the open issues. You can go to that GitHub project. There's a lot of stuff going on in .NET open source that isn't just Roslyn, that isn't just CoreFX. Sometimes people don't even know these things are out there. Kestrel, the .NET
docs.
Micro framework interpreter.
How about the docs?
The docs. Docs are a great example where we're having a lot of excitement around open source within .NET. He's going to go up to our new docs page at ASP.NET. What we ended up doing was partnering with some folks called Read the Docs, readthedocs.org. It's a Python-based system, but we're building .NET stuff up here. And we built a bridge to allow you to talk .NET and Python. And you've got really great community-based documentation. You see right there, it says edit on GitHub. It doesn't actually use Markdown. It uses a thing called restructured text, which is kind of Markdown for documentation. It's a fantastic tool. Hit the lower left corner there where it says vlatest.
Do what?
Lower left corner. It's green. It's above your Outlook icon. Hit that. Left. Here, he can actually click PDF and get a PDF of all the docs. So we're actually dynamically writing a book with the community. So if you have thought about getting involved in open source before, but the idea of getting all of ASP.NET down by itself and getting it to work is a little scary, maybe contributing to open source in the form of working on our docs would be a useful thing. Maybe we can do them all in Swedish. Let's go to the next one here. So that's .NET. That's .NET Core. Let's talk a little bit about ASP.NET 5. Now, this diagram is one of my favorite diagrams. You're not a fan. You're not a fan of the boxes.
I don't like boxes.
I love the boxes. So I'm going to break it down, unless you want to break it down. No?
Break it down.
Well, don't slip, by the way. Okay. ASP.NET in 2015 ships with Visual Studio 2015. What we shipped and what we RTM'd, what we released, is ASP.NET 4.6. That's released. It's out. It's now. It's open source. And it runs on top of the .NET Framework 4.6. That .NET Framework is what they call the full framework. Okay, this is really important. This slide deck is for you to explain to your bosses. This is why I'm telling you this, because you probably know most of this stuff. But it's important to really get it in your head so there's no confusion, because bosses freak out when new versions of stuff come out.
A good way to think of this stack is this stack ships as part of Windows.
Right.
So the .NET 4.6 or .NET 4.5 or .NET whatever, these big full frameworks are a Windows component, and we can rev them at the speed of Windows. And that's what controls their destiny. And so as we move into 4.6 here, talk about some of the things we did here. If you're an ASP.NET developer, and that's what this is about, we should talk about things in ASP.NET. So ASP.NET, we are still maintaining this framework and adding new stuff to it. We added support for HTTP2 built into this. We added async model binding for web forms. And we added some of the next generation Windows security to this as well. So we're continuing to invest in this framework and moving it forward as each release of Windows comes out.
Right, and .NET 4.6 also gets all that investment with the new compilers, so you can have Roslyn on your web forms apps that are running. So if you have .NET 4 applications that are running web forms, you still get cool stuff. You get asynchronous model binding. You get Roslyn for your web forms. You get
That's
Roslyn
a good point. If you actually, not even web forms. If you do file new 4X project inside of Visual Studio 2015, we install, whether it's MVC, Web API, SignalR, web forms, we install a NuGet package, which brings you the Roslyn compilers. If you have an existing project, you can go look at, find that same Roslyn package installed into any existing ASP.NET project, ASP.2, 4, 4, 5, whatever, and you'll get the latest C# and VB features.
So give me the next slide here. So at this point, let's just snapshot in our minds. 4.6 runs on Windows. It uses the .NET framework libraries. And it does, though, still get all of the innovation at the core runtime level. You've got Roslyn. You've got F#. You've got the new jitter, all those new instruction sets for new Intel processors. Now, he just split that top green box there. He's got ASP.NET 4.6 and then 5. Here's where it gets confusing. ASP.NET 5 is not yet released. It's currently in beta. Beta 8 came out last week. But it runs on top of .NET Framework 4.6. So here's where you have some choice. Now, we had talked a number of years ago about one ASP.NET, about the unification of things, and we're trying to move towards that with ASP.NET 5. Kick that back for me. I'm on a roll here. So ASP.NET 5 is the unified set running on top of .NET Framework 4.6, which only runs on Windows because it ships with Windows. Now, boom, ASP.NET 5 also runs on the core framework, .NET Core 5. That can be a little bit confusing because there's the web library, the web framework, which is ASP.NET 5, and then there's the target framework that it's going to be running on, which is .NET Core 5 and .NET Framework 4.6. You can see that Core runs on Mac, Linux, and Windows. But what if I wanted to call the beep API, or I wanted to make a graphic, or I wanted to do something that would call down into Win32, right? Those things don't exist on Mac or Linux. So the core framework doesn't include WinForms, it doesn't include WPF, it doesn't include, right now, system.drawing, because those things simply are not available on those other platforms.
Yeah, there's no WCF, there's no workflow, there's a whole variety of things that are not there. Basically, the idea behind .NET Core was not to build a big monolithic framework this time, but to build a very small core, which ends up being about 10 megs. And then everything that we actually bring in on top of that, we'll bring in via NuGet packages, including ASP.NET 5, the Roslyn compilers, the framework, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So this is a server-side framework that has been pared down to its core. That's why it's called the Core 5 framework. And it works everywhere. Now, this is also important. This isn't going to be a situation where we give you the Windows version of the core framework, and then a couple of months later, we give you the Linux version, and it's kind of not quite up to the same quality. The intent here is to simultaneously ship these things. They will all be awesome at the exact same time, and you will have a go-live license to put these into production at the same time. Is that correct?
But a great reason also that we actually have ASP.NET 5 crossing both of these. Mm-hmm. If you actually try to go start using .NET Core today, you might find there's something missing, like drawing, which you were saying earlier, is missing. That's why we're letting you run ASP.NET 5 both on the full framework and on .NET Core, because we want to make porting applications as simple as possible. In the case of Core, we're taking feedback from customers. If you complain and say, hey, this library is not available, I want it, we might make that library available as a NuGet package, or you could actually go take, via the open source, all the 4.6 codes out there, you could actually go take that, make your own NuGet package, and maybe we'll support that as well.
Cool. So give me the next slide here. Here is, just to be clear, and this is a good one to take pictures of and show to your bosses, and I'll send you these slides if you want. These are RTM'd. That means they're released, they're supported, they're out today, and you should feel free to do work on them now. Next one. These are open source. See how ASP.NET 4.6 is both open source and RTM. So it's ready to go, and it's being actively worked on. And if you find a bug in 4.6, it's open source, get involved. Okay? 5 and Core 5 and the libraries going down there, they are not yet released. Again, we're on beta 8 right now with ASP.NET 5. But, you know, coming soon, and when they are done, we'll have a whole bunch of OSSs up there and a whole bunch of RTMs up there.
The schedule we have right now is all the stuff that says ASP.NET 5, .NET Core, .NET Core libraries. We're going to have a go-live RC for these things in November.
So a go-live RC, that means you have permission to go into production with this. We will support you. We will encourage you to stay up to date for when it actually gets released. And the RC will be a release candidate, meaning it's close to, but not quite what we're going to release.
It's even supported. You could actually call Microsoft support and get support for it if you found an issue with it. The big thing there, ASP.NET and all of its libraries will actually be very stable. So if you actually build on something on the RC that comes out in November, you're pretty much guaranteed that's going to work fine on the RTM when the RTM comes out a few months later.
So would it be fair to say that ASP.NET 5 is going to be more baked than .NET Core, and that way, that's why you have the ability to switch between the frameworks?
Actually, they're all supposed to have their surfaces complete, meaning mm-hmm. that all the APIs should be there for both ASP.NET and .NET Core. All that we're going to be working on is fixing bugs and doing performance improvements across the stacks.
And we're going to talk about performance improvements in detail in a little bit.
So I'll talk about some of the main themes of ASP.NET 5. When we envisioned ASP.NET 5 a couple years ago, a couple things had changed in the web space. One was a lot of the newer web frameworks were more modular, meaning that instead of having everything turned on by default, you could just turn things on one by one by one. So we've actually rewritten ASP.NET 5 to be totally modular, where you can turn on everything manually. So if you want to serve static files, you turn that on. If you want to have MVC, you turn that on. If you want to have Web API, you turn that on. Each thing is enabled one by one. And we're going to do some demos later and show that. Another thing is we want to speed up that development cycle. Your development cycle today is you're in Visual Studio, and you modify some code, then you compile, and then you control F5, and it launches the browser. That's a 10, 11-second change. We want to get to a point where you just save your code and refresh your browser. There's no build step. And get that cycle down to 2 or 3 seconds instead of 10 seconds.
That's because people expect that now. People
yes.
want to use Node. People want to use PHP. Well, nobody wants to use PHP. But people want to have an experience where they are in a language that they like, on a framework that they like, and then in the next window, they've got their browser, and it's edit some code, refresh, edit some code, refresh. They want that fast cycle, but they also want the speed and the scalability of .NET.
Right. That same cycle is actually what enables the two bullets over here, choose your own editors and tools and cross-platform. As you know, today when you build an ASP.NET project, you're using Visual Studio to build that project. We knew on the Mac and Linux we weren't going to have Visual Studio there, so we had to have the ASP.NET be able to compile itself. So now when you save files and you refresh your browser, ASP.NET detects which files have changed, and it recompiles itself on the fly automatically in that 2 to 3 second window. Because of this means you can use whatever editor you want. You can use Visual Studio. You can use VS Code. You can use Sublime. You can use Notepad. You can use anything. So we enable all those different tools. Another thing is Scott and I both work for the cloud team at Microsoft. We want to make it as easy to build applications that run on your local data center, and then when you want to move them to the cloud at some point, hopefully the Azure cloud, that's simple. Today, ASP.NET requires you to add NuGet packages and change the way you use cache and session state, and we're going to make all that transparent so you don't have to make those code changes as you move to this. And then finally, this is the one that I love the most, is fast. I want to be the fastest web framework on the planet. Got a question for folks. Who in here thinks Java is the fastest web framework? No hands. How about Node.js? No takers on Node.js?
What do you think the fastest web framework is?
What is the fastest web framework?
HTML5 isn't a web framework.
That's a text file.
Static files.
Static files are pretty fast.
The Swedes are not going to take the bait.
Well, it's funny. We hear from a lot of customers that think that Node.js is probably the fastest. And we actually, if you go to the Tech Empower benchmark page, you'll find that Tech Empower has got a web framework benchmark where they benchmark all the popular web frameworks. And it's interesting to go look. You want to find number 10.
So here's tech. Here's the web framework, round 10.
Let's go to plain text.
And then what are these benchmarks measuring?
These benchmarks measure a variety of things. Plain text is just having something that returns a method or an API that returns a plain text. Some of the other ones actually do database calls. Some do a culmination of all those things together. The plain text one shows the raw performance of just sending data out the stream.
So this is responses per second. Now, this is to be clear, benchmarks are benchmarks for
all benchmarks are kind of eh.
But still, it's interesting. And in the past, people have found ASP.NET very low on the list there, historically.
Comically, it's been right around where Node.js is. Mm-hmm. And so if you scroll down and find Node on that list, so you see Undertow, which is a Java framework, is way up there in the 4.7, 4.9 million. And as we scroll down and down.
There's Node.
There's Node at 287,000. So we're now running these same benchmarks internally in the labs at Microsoft. Our numbers look a little different because we're running on different hardware than these guys have. But now as part of our actual build process of ASP.NET, we look every day and see how we're doing.
So this is our benchmarks. You can go and see all of this. None of this is done in secret anymore, right? It's all public.
It's all GitHub. You can download it and run it yourself. Scroll to the bottom of the list. We want to find the pipelining.
Plain text.
Go to one more down.
Plain text with HTTP
this
pipeline.
This shows where we're at today. And you can see Node.js on our hardware is running around 144,000 requests a second.
Yeah, our hardware is not as powerful as theirs.
No, we don't. And you can see us at 443,000 requests a second. So we've actually made a couple of steps. We used to be almost neck and neck with Node, and now we're a couple times faster than Node. If you look at the Scala here, which is using Java, you can see they're a little bit faster than us still. But the team is confident that we know how to get there and even faster. And if you scroll back up, we have some experiments that we've been doing. There you go. Let's go to one more down. So libuv is the I/O library that Node.js is written with. And what we've done inside the labs is we've actually taken C#, bolted it right to libuv, and seen how fast we can make it go. And you can see we can get up in the 2.3 million range. Mm-hmm. Rio is another library. It's a Windows-only I/O library. And using that library, we've been able to get almost to 6 million requests a second. By the way, these two demos are not running ASP.NET. We did get ASP.NET running on Rio, and the number dropped to around 2 million. But it shows you that we have the potential to get in the 2 to 3 million range for these benchmarks, and making ASP.NET somewhere in the top 5, top 10 of that Tech Empower benchmark.
So right now, we're here talking about it. We're talking about, well, we've done these things in the lab. We had ASP.NET running on top of Rio. It's about 2 million. And 2 million would put us fairly comfortably in the top 10 up there with some very core pared down frameworks. Right. When do you think we'll be able to actually say that and be in that list somewhere?
Sometime next first quarter, second quarter of next year, I think would be the right time.
That's cool. Now, this is another really important thing. Benchmarks are benchmarks. I always use the analogy of minivans are not motorcycles. And one of the challenges that we had with web forms versus MVC is that web forms has some weight to it. It has things like session state and view state and cookies. It has a larger request space. But it allows you to do really cool stuff and make enterprise-level dashboards and use components. I mean, it's a great framework. I did web forms for years. If you then move down towards the HTTP handler level, move towards doing things with raw
IIS modules,
you get more and more and more perf. What we wanted to do with the modularity, going back to here, you call out the idea of it being totally modular, is enable someone to have the productivity of an MVC, of a Rails, of a Node, and then the speed.
While you talk about that, let me jump to VS and let's bring up an app here.
And then can have the speed of some kind of a raw thing. If you went into web forms and said response.write hello world and then ran perf stuff on that, well, all of the weight of web forms is the stuff that makes web forms productive. You're not going to be able to compete against something that's using C++ to spit out to a raw socket and go, hello world. But if you make a modular framework where stuff is optional, where session state is optional, where cookies are optional, where request sizes are smaller. For example, the in-memory usage of an HTTP request on web forms was around 20-something, 26K?
Yeah, so the HTTP context object, which, by the way, affects not just web forms, it affects web forms and MVC. One of the funny things is people go, oh, MVC is faster than web forms. That's actually not true. Web forms is about 3% faster than MVC. If you strip
3%?
3% faster. We actually know exactly in the lab exactly how much faster it is.
I did not know that.
Yeah, most people don't know that. So if you actually do a raw page with no controls and stuff like that and do response right, you're going to be a little bit faster than MVC.
Right, but then if you do HTTP handlers or IIS or whatever, moving down. So we want to make an ASP.NET framework that's going to let you have that raw speed, if you're doing some kind of an embedded system or something on a Raspberry Pi or an IoT device that's going to be very low level, or something that's more complicated. So here he has just gone and made a file new project, and he's made an empty website, not an MVC website, just empty.
But this is really all there is. All we're doing is calling run and passing it some code, which writes something out. There's no routing running here. There's no MVC or web forms. There's no session state, there's no error pages, there's no nothing.
So for people who have been doing ASP.NET for a long time, is this the equivalent, and I say equivalent in air quotes, of like an HTTP handler?
Yes.
That does process request and says, hello world.
It's the equivalent of HTTP handler, but even it's even rarer in that even in HTTP handler today, we're going to run all those modules. No modules are running here. Like, session state's a module today.
Okay, so this is as raw as you get.
This is as low as you can get. This is bare
and
metal.
And you ran that already, and it said hello world, and right? He proved that. Okay, so what he's going to do now is he's going to throw an exception because he's a manager, and they don't know how to code. So he's going to consciously throw an exception here, and it's going, what would you expect? That would get a yellow screen of death, right? That's the standard thing that you would get in ASP.NET. And here he's getting this sad face of death here. Who threw this? Who generated that page right there, Scott Hunter?
The actual host. So the actual bare metal host, IIS, calls into our host.
IIS Express is running down there in the tray.
Yes. And then as soon as it calls into our host imploded, and that was what you got.
Was that the ASP.NET yellow screen of death?
No.
Okay, so that is the host thing that caught that exception. The exception bubbled up to that host, and that made the sad face. He's going to go in here into the dependencies. This is as if he were saying add reference. You'll notice that there's nothing there. He's just got a web listener. And he's going to put in ASP.NET.diagnostics. He hits save. Watch the right-hand side. You see it says references restoring? See how that just went like that? He added a NuGet package, and it automatically came down. That was the equivalent of saying install package. All right? So now, in this pipeline of things that run when a request comes in, he's going to say use error page. He has now plugged in the yellow screen of death. The yellow screen of death wasn't there before. We have all, at one point in developing things with ASP.NET, we have wanted to replace that. But it's been baked in. It's baked into system.web. Now, this is the light blue, friendly yellow screen of death. It includes things like, you know, cookies and stack. But you can edit this. It's just a piece of middleware that sits in the pipeline. So you can have your own custom stuff. If, for example, you made a commerce application specific to your company, and people have shopping carts, and you want their shopping cart to appear in the error message for developers to debug, you could plug that in. Everything is pluggable. Everything. When we say totally modular, the focus is not on modular, it's on totally.
It also means you can replace things. Like you saw this new error page. If you want to write your own error page today in ASP.NET, it's not possible.
Yep, that's exactly what I just said.
Now,
I'm glad you were paying attention.
I was working on code, man.
So hang on one second here. He just took the little project readme.html and he renamed it to index.html. Will you follow my lead on this for a second?
Do what?
Will you follow my lead on this for a second? So do me a favor and just hit localhost/index.html so we'll serve that static page. Okay, so he's getting the error. That's because the error was first in the pipeline. The only thing this application knows how to do here is throw an error. So he's going to get rid of that.
We'll still get the same response.
And now it says, hello world. Let's go ahead and hit /index.html. Still says, hello world. This application doesn't know how to serve static files. because we never told it to serve static files. We just told it to have an error page. So now he's going to go and add in ASP.NET dot static files. It's a cafeteria plan, right? You just say, I want a little of this and a little of this, like the sushi restaurants where the little food comes around the thing. Do you have that here? No? It's like IKEA, you know? I'm trying to think of what kind of an analogy I can use here that'll work. Here he's saying use static file. He's just taught it. Now he's going to say slash index.html, and what happens? Boom. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. It says hello world. Because look where it is. Zoom in on that. It's index.html sitting in the root. That's where we stuck things before, but that's not where we're going to stick things anymore. And that's because modern web development is a little bit more complex now. JavaScript files, you don't just drop them into the root of your application and have them get served. You might want them to be compressed or minified or bundled together. You might have a client-side build process. Yeah. So he's going to drop. Did you just put startup into?
Yeah, I did.
What are you doing? It's so adorable to watch managers code. It's like watching my dad on Facebook. So he just put the index.html in www root. Now he's going to swap out the web server as well. He's going to bring in using Kestrel and not IIS Express right there. So here you see how a DOS prompt or a command prompt just popped up. And this is going to go up on, I think, what is it, port 5000, something like that?
Yep.
So then he's going to hit index.html. And we'll see if that gets served or not. And that is the project README that got made with the application. This is a great little demo, and the reason that we do it, and I realize it's 101, but even for advanced people, it's a good reminder on how this thing works. There's a pipeline. Order matters. You get nothing for free. That's how you get fast benchmarks, but it's also how you take complete control over your application and how you're able to decide, well, I don't want session state at all. I'm not going to turn it off in a web config somewhere. I'm just never going to include it. It doesn't even exist as a concept. That is what we're aiming to do here. So now he has just gone and made a new web application. This is a unified ASP.NET 5 application. And under references here, we've got two things. We've got DNX 4.5.1, and then we've got DNX Core 5. DNX today in this beta means .NET execution environment. It's that host. It's that thing that is holding our application. But it's interesting here. He's got two of those. 4.5.1 is the lowest version of the .NET framework that you can use if you want to use ASP.NET 5. And then Core 5 is .NET Core 5. Okay. I think it should have said .NET Core, but we'll argue about that another time. What's significant here is that when he says build, it builds twice. Remember that green bar on that chart in PowerPoint that said that ASP.NET 5 runs on both full framework and core framework? When you make it by default here with a file new project, it builds and runs on both by default so that you know what your options are. And we have a thing called Unified IntelliSense, which means if you start using an API, a method that isn't available on one versus the other, it'll warn you. So you can go now and start working with ASP.NET 5, playing with your applications and getting them ready. You can port them over. You can bring them into a new project and start exploring your code. And Unified IntelliSense and the errors that you get when you compile will teach you about the surface area of each and whether or not it's feasible for you to move to Core 5, or whether you might want to break your applications up into different pieces, have part of it be full framework, part of it not. With Beta 8, you're able to do that now, actually.
Right.
You can use ASP.NET 4.6 and .NET 5 together on the same machine and the same things. Now, this is interesting. He's got the references pane there open, and you get the little NuGet icons. Notice with full framework, the little NuGet icons go all the way down until they hit those little black barbell-looking deals. I don't know what those mean.
Well, the big point to make here is everything in references today or in Visual Studio in the past has been assemblies,
right,
or DLLs.
And those NuGet packages, at the very end there, reference assemblies that are in the GAC.
We've now made
cache.
The reference node all packages. So in the ASP.NET 5 world, everything you reference is a package. You don't reference assemblies, you reference packages.
Right.
Everything's a package all the way down to .NET.
And your references list isn't flat, it's a tree. But I want to point out that in DNX 4.5.1, you saw that the leaf node, the end of the tree there, were .NET Framework DLLs that live on disk in the GAC somewhere. But in .NET Core 5, which needs to be able to be run on a memory stick or copied, x-copied to another machine, that does not end in a leaf node that says, this uses a secret file
There's
in the
no
Windows
black boxes.
Folder. It goes all the way down. And even the system.framework stuff is a NuGet package. It's entirely self-contained. That is really, really significant. So why is that significant? Because let's say that this gentleman has a .NET 4.5 application that works great, it's reliable, it's running at work. Okay? Now she wants to use .NET 4.6, but they work at the same company, she has to put it on the same server. She goes to IT, says, I got this great app, it's using 4.6. Yeah, but we're worried it might break his application, it's on 4.5, and then it's a fight, right? She wants to use the new tools and the new innovative stuff. He's old and boring, wants to use, no, I'm just kidding, you're a lovely person. But they're afraid of each other. They're afraid of the .NET framework itself. They're afraid that the applications might break. That's ridiculous. And then what happens is, a couple of years later, he's still running .NET 2. She's moved on to .NET 5. She quits the job because IT won't let her use the new great stuff. The real experience that people want is one that she can have her own private copy of Roslyn, her own personal build of MVC, and it will not affect his application because they should be unrelated to each other.
The most common complaint we get with ASP.NET today is, oh yeah, I want to use that new await keyword. Well, you need to use .NET 4.5. Well, IT says I can use that in 2 years.
Right. That is not a decision IT should be making. It is a decision you should be making and then working with IT. But the idea that I can't install the new framework because I'm afraid of it, that is over. Those days are over.
ASP.NET 5 object applications are completely self-contained.
Absolutely.
No system 32, no registry, no nothing.
Now, you want to talk about Bower real quick?
Yeah, let's talk about Bower.
Okay, so we're going to take a little bit of a step away from the server side for a moment and talk about the client side. Now, I want to point out that Hunter is going into text files here and changing stuff. You won't have to do any of these text files. A lot of people are concerned about Bower and Gulp and Grunt and all these funny words that the hipsters are using to describe today's web. If you don't like those things, we are not removing the visual from Visual Studio. We're going to be able to go into the NuGet dialog. You'll be able to go into the NuGet dialog and put in jQuery, and Bower and NuGet packages will appear next to each other. You will be able to go and bring down jQuery as a library or Angular as a library without having to go into a text file.
Well, let's talk about the reason we're doing this. Today, if you go to NuGet and you grab jQuery or you go grab Bootstrap or any of these frameworks, somebody on my team, including him, might be the one that's actually packaging those things up as NuGet.
Me and John Papa are the ones that package up AngularJS for NuGet. It's stupid. The NuGet team, the Angular team should do that, right? Except NuGet's not for JavaScript libraries.
So we actually went and said, hey, where are the open source places that people stick their stuff? Bower and NPM end up being the main two places, mm-hmm. and so we built that support directly into Visual Studio. And we're going to take it a step further that, as Scott was saying before, we're not going to take the visual out. The NuGet dialog box in the RC in November will actually, if you search for AngularJS, it might show up in NuGet, but in NuGet it would have a link saying, click here to open it up in the Bower tab, and it would give you a list of the same libraries in Bower, and it would download.
So go ahead and do that. Now, right now, in this simple framework example, in this simple file new project example, the dependencies there on the right, see it says dependencies Bower, he's going to hit save. Oh. What are you running Windows 8 for? What is wrong with you? He's going to hit save and watch underneath dependencies there. It says restoring. AngularJS, it just recognized that it needs it. Now it's going to go and get it. And then in this case here, go ahead and just scroll up just a smidge there. Zoom up a bit. Yeah, I want to see the www root as the top. We have, do I need to move the mouse for you, buddy?
No.
Grandpa's in Facebook. www.root.lib. What he's done here for beginners is a good thing. We've put the Bower location into the same place as www.root. That way, you don't need a second step. Someone would go to www.root/lib/angular, and it's right there. That's a good thing for beginners. The bad thing is it includes a bunch of other stuff that came along with it that isn't needed. So a more advanced scenario would be to have those Bower components live outside of WWW root. That's because they're source code. And then you'd use a thing like gulp or grunt, which is basically MS build for JavaScript, and you would build, you would pluck out the AngularJS that you want, and then you'd minify it or combine it or bundle it and put it into WWW root and get it ready. Okay? So you can do that in the gulp file here. You can see he's got all the different paths and stuff for cleaning and minifying, things like that. We did this because we wanted to make it easy out of the box, but also totally powerful for the advanced people. Again, you won't have to look at a gulp file or a Bower file if you don't want to.
In fact, they won't even be in the list by default.
Yeah, you have to click Show All Files, which is the Don't Lie to Me button in Visual Studio.
Let's talk about frameworks.
Okay. We have been doing all of this stuff on Beta 7, because Beta 8 came out while we were on the road. He just typed in DNVM list. Again, you don't have to do this if you don't want to. You can see this list inside of Visual Studio, but we went to the DOS prompt to show you that. And those files are located not in C, Windows, Microsoft, Framework, .NET, blah, 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 but rather in C user Scott runtimes. So if we go down here, here are these runtimes. Okay? Notice.
Nuke a few.
Yeah, well, let's do this. I will accidentally delete the .NET framework. Oops. So those are gone.
The tool even noticed they're gone. That's how you install a .NET framework. It's just a folder on the disk. There is no registry, there's no GAC.
So now I'm going to Control Z. And then run it again. Now I've restored the .NET framework. Now this says that this is the alias default and also poop. Who would have done that?
I never would have guessed who would do that.
Now, in old Microsoft, this would probably be inside of an XML file that's been base64'd and put into the registry.
Oh, there'd be a
and
registry.
Then binary, yeah, exactly. New Microsoft, it's actually in a text file called poop. There you go. That the alias itself, that default alias, is just the name of the framework.
Yeah.
And that allows me to then say .NET version manager, DNVM use default, or DNVM use beta, or use daily, or whatever. You could bring down a daily build and not be afraid of it.
If you don't like it, just delete the folder.
Absolutely.
And you can install new ones as well. You can just type DNVM install. And we'll give you a pile of help on how to do that. But I can say things like DNVM install. I could say...
Are you going to break something?
I'm not going to do it. But I could say OS
Darwin. Do you need to be afraid?
I am afraid. And I could say I want a core CLR. So if I ran this...
He actually did that earlier. Darwin is Mac. That's the code name. That's what the name for what is underlying the Macintosh. So he did that already. He said...
But that command would actually
OS.
Do that.
He won't do it again because we've already got it. And then he wants the core CLR for Mac. Now, this is interesting. He brought down the core CLR for Mac on his Windows machine. Why would he do that? Why would he do that? Not because he wants to run the Mac virtual machine. It won't work. The CLR won't work. It's because he wants to develop on a Mac and publish. Excuse me, he wants to develop on Windows and then publish to a Mac. Does that make sense? He wants to bundle this stuff up. So he's actually got the ability now to develop on any framework he wants and then publish to any framework he wants. So right now, we'll go from a Windows machine to a Mac, but we could do the same thing on a Mac to Windows. You would bring down the core CLR and package it up. So here he's going to bring in Kestrel. Kestrel is the web server. Now, there's a little confusion about this idea about the responsibilities of a web server as it relates to IIS. Kestrel does not mean IIS is going away. Kestrel means that this thing is responsible for hosting ASP.NET, for talking to it, for getting ASP.NET to fire up and make strings. It then passes that to IIS. IIS handles things like authentication at the IIS level, SSL certificates and transport, IIS stuff. Just like you would have Apache talking to Node or Nginx talking to Apache to Node. This allows us, again, modularity, allows us to do all sorts of stuff. You could have a Linux box with Nginx talking to Kestrel, running ASP.NET, or you could have Windows and Azure talking to IIS through the HTTP platform handler. This means that ASP.NET 5 talks to IIS the same way that Node, PHP, and Rails do today. Everyone's playing on a level playing field. So now he's going to say DNX Kestrel, the .NET execution environment, and he's going
to
say Kestrel, where Kestrel is a command.
Do you want to talk about these commands? That DNX lets me run these commands?
Right. So here he's got three commands there. He's got Kestrel, Web, and EF. Are those appearing up in the menu there as well? Can you go up to the menu where it says Debug? Yeah, that right there. Zoom in on that. You see that says EF, Web, and Kestrel right there? EF is Entity Framework. And he can change those for whatever he wants, right? You can have different hosts and different plugs, but you can also have different commands. During the deep dive, we'll show examples of other commands that you can plug in.
You would call DNX EF if you wanted to run a migration, for example.
Right, so that's a migration, a database migration. So in this case here, he's going to say Kestrel, which says, boot this thing up and start hosting it. There you go. That's on port 5000. Notice that IIS is nowhere around. Again, it doesn't mean that you don't need IIS, you don't have IIS. It means you have a choice now, right? You're not going to go live in production on node.exe. You're going to front it with something. You don't go live into production with Webbrick on Rails. And I don't know if you guys speak Rails or Node here, but hopefully that made sense. Okay? So now he's going to say publish, and he's going to go back up to that DNX folder there and say runtimes. Now, right now, he's doing this again at the command line because I want you to understand how it works. You'll be able to do this stuff inside of Visual Studio. You'll be able to right-click, publish to Docker from a Windows machine, all graphically. You'll be able to right-click, publish to Azure. So here, it's running NPM, it's running Bower, it's going and it's packaging this thing up. He's going to publish it, and he explicitly said, with Darwin. So he's getting all the package dependencies and stuff. This can be a little bit overwhelming sometimes because people don't realize how big the .NET base class library
is. There it is. Scott is bundling the runtime right now.
Oh, there it is. It was .NET Framework's 250 megs, right? Now when you break it apart, you're going to feel like this new framework is complicated. It's just because before the framework was hidden in the C Windows folder and you didn't realize how big and scary it was. Now it's a bunch of little tiny things and you can pick and choose what you want. So there it says bundling runtime and he put it on C demo. Let's copy that onto a USB key. So he's going into bin output. In the bin folder isn't a bunch of DLLs. Instead, each one of those commands, EF, Kestrel, and Web, got a text file. Do me a favor, before you copy that all over there, but then I also want to see, what are you doing?
Runtimes, the fact that there's the CLR
the runtime,
sitting
the
in my runtime folder?
Runtime, yeah. So get the copy started, and then I want you to do some stuff. No pressure. It's so funny when you watch someone else use like a mouse or a keyboard because there's literally 1,000 different ways that he could get that file from this place to that place that are faster than what he's doing. But he's my boss, and I can't tell him those things. He could run Norton Commander. It would be faster than what he's doing right here. So go ahead and use Notepad and open up the Kestrel that is not kestrel.cmd. I renamed Notepad to N. That saves me a lot of oat pads that he doesn't have to. He has to write them all. I just type N. So this is a bash file, actually. You can actually tell because it's using line feeds and Notepad doesn't understand. So that is the thing that boots it up, that starts it up. While on Windows, it's a command file, right? So how's our copy doing?
We're done.
Good. USB 3 for the win. So there is app root and www root and the Kestrel file there. Let's bring that over onto our Macintosh. And let's go ahead and have the gentleman in the back switch us over to Mac. Look at that fade. So professional. This is very nice. At the last conference, we just like yanked out the cable and shoved it into the thing.
We actually grabbed a Mac out of the audience at the last conference.
That is true. We actually, what we did is we said, does anyone have a Mac? And we just grabbed a random Mac out of the audience. Well, we know no one here would be so dirty as to have a Mac with them. So we couldn't count on one to be here. So he just CD'd over to that USB key. So you're actually running this off the USB key. You're going to say ./Kestrel. Pause for effect.
It'll take a little bit of time because it's actually loading it off the memory stick. We've actually not installed anything on the Mac
at
all.
Didn't take any time at all. USB 3, baby. All right. He's going to run Internet Explorer 6, I mean Safari. All right. That is the same exact ASP.NET 5 application that he file new on Windows, packaged it up with Darwin, copied it onto a USB key, and it's running off that USB key right there. There he is in volumes. Cool. Now what are you doing?
Just watch.
Just watch, he says.
Here we are in the application.
Ah, now you're just showing off. So now he just typed code and dot. Go ahead and, yeah, that's not a good idea.
I'll zoom in a second here.
No, it's not about zooming in. It's gone completely off the screen. No, it's like all boogered up.
Well, what you see is what I want you to see, so that's good.
Okay. Huh. If you say so.
So I'm going to change the app here.
Do you need to do a restore?
Yeah, I will.
All right. So he's going to modify this. He's in Visual Studio Code. Of course, Visual Studio Code, to be clear, is not an IDE. It is a code editor. It's a smart code editor. It does IntelliSense and stuff. Yeah, I don't think the screen thing is working with the full screen. It's all cut off.
Yeah, I see it. But you see the code, which is what I want you to see. So.
Okay.
And we might want to show while we're here, you were talking earlier about IntelliSense.
Uh-huh. Everything's all squiggled out, though, which is not good.
It is squiggled out.
That's because you need to run restore.
I actually ran restore. This is just a reality of this world, so.
It's a reality of the world. What are you doing? It's going back and forth. I don't run restore that way. I run it, and I have that code do it.
Yes. This is a weird demo.
This is a weird demo? Beta 8. Beta 8 is better than beta 7. Yeah, see?
In fact, it blew up.
You don't have to do dot anymore.
You do on the Mac.
You do?
Do I not?
I think we removed that in beta 7.
Let's see if it comes up.
So what are you doing? I've lost control of the talk. I felt like
there
I
you
was
go.
In control
Modified
before.
On the Mac. So we built an app on the Windows box, put it to a memory stick, copied it to a Mac.
Yeah.
It just ran. I have no compilers or anything else installed on my Mac. All I did is launch it Visual Studio Code, mm-hmm. got IntelliSense, modified the application, reran it off the memory stick still, and it works.
So that means that mixed teams that have designers on a Mac and regular people on Windows and kind of weirdos running Ubuntu can go and move from place to place. Of course, you're not going to use manager-style source control by just putting everything in v1.zip like Hunter does. You'll use Git or VSO like a proper individual. I didn't think he was paying attention. Here he's going to type yo ASP.NET. This is using Yeoman. This is file new project from the command line. We're using Yeoman. And you'll notice here we've got Nancy, which is a third-party open source library in there. We're going to try to make it even easier for them to get into Visual Studio, so you can go file new from there. Go ahead and pick Web Application Basic, which is going to be a web app that doesn't have auth. And then he'll make that local. So here he's gone file new project. Now, he can do a DNU restore here, and the DNU restore is like npm install. It goes and it says, get all the packages I need. But he could have just gone into code. Code is now smart enough to know that a restore needs to happen, and it'll do it for you. In the deep dive, we will go and show you ways to extend code to make it more friendly, to make it so that you don't have to keep stopping DNX when you want to go and do that edit and refresh, which we haven't shown yet. We'll actually show you in detail how to do that. So which application is this? This is the new one? Yep.
Yeah.
So then we've made, and then I could take that one and move it over to Windows or send it up to Azure or stick it on a Docker machine somewhere in Linux. So
the
point
there,
here
is choice.
But the
point there, we're showing file new there, so.
No, it's exciting. I'm happy for your accomplishment.
Not sure if that's a compliment or not.
It's a compliment. This is American sarcasm. It's okay. We like each other. Don't worry. Cool. What are you doing? You just start typing stuff. You don't even tell me. He's getting IntelliSense. People want to see ASP.NET 5 on Linux so bad that they will break into the emergency exits, setting off fire alarms, because they want it that much. It's so good. So here he's got IntelliSense. This is using an open source project called OmniSharp. And it's a little bit small, but if you see a little smiley face down there in the corner, there's a little flame. That's the OmniSharp flame. Would you do me a favor, sir, and would you go to OmniSharp.net in your browser? OmniSharp is the thing that is talking to Roslyn that is doing the IntelliSense. Because when you type, you're kicking that over to... You're not on the internet.
We didn't put this machine on the internet, so...
If only we had two computers and one of them was on the internet. Maybe we could switch over to the Windows machine.
Switch cables? Are we good?
No, we don't switch cables. The guy is going to go and make a fade, and it's going to be amazing. Let's go into fade. Fade. I don't know how to say switch the thing in Swedish.
There you go.
Perfect. So OmniSharp, this is an open source project, and it is the thing that is empowering that IntelliSense. It talks to Roslyn, and as you're typing in Visual Studio Code, it's sending all of those bits over there. And you just totally ruined my... I was walking here for effect, and then I was going to turn.
I know you were.
And then OmniSharp would be there. These two people talks, man. It just doesn't work.
We got a few minutes left.
Can you show me OmniSharp for just a second? I got a little pause for effect. Now you can go. Fine.
That's a beautiful screen,
Scott.
No,
but look at all the logos.
It's a beautiful, beautiful screen.
It's all the logos.
Beautiful screen.
You suck. All right, go ahead. Do your thing. It's all falling apart. Please, let's all watch you log into your Hotmail.
I'm actually not going to log into my Hotmail.
No, it's please. You want to check your Facebook?
I don't actually have Facebook.
Couldn't figure it out.
So a couple things we're going to show tomorrow is we're going to do some deep dive on some of the command line stuff that Scott was talking about.
2013.
Another thing that I want to show is this is something we're going to talk about tomorrow as well. A feature called Tag Helpers. And I want to show Tag Helpers just a little bit here before we get in tomorrow.
You're in Visual Studio 2013?
Yes. I want to show an old project.
Oh.
Let's go look at a login page that we have here. And the funny thing about this login page is this is supposed to be HTML. And yet, there really isn't lots of HTML there. There's all this color stuff, HTML.password, and...
Yeah, HTML helpers were a good idea until you got into really complicated forms, and then it kind of exploded.
I mean, anonymous objects to create classes? That just seems like a alien way of doing this.
Well, Razor was a really great thing, and you could go at and start typing C#, but then you notice there where you had at class in the middle of an at, and then you started having multiple ats, it gets really complicated. You really just want to write HTML. So this is... the same exact page, except over in Visual Studio 2015 using ASP.NET 5.
This one looks like HTML.
Now notice that some of those tags are purple. Okay? This is important because people who've been around a long time think that this is the return of run at server. It's not. These are not controls like web forms. They do not have life cycle to speak of.
But if I come over here and I try to do IntelliSense.
Like this is that at class right there. That's him making an anonymous object in order to add a class attribute, and that CSS class is
in
there. He's got no IntelliSense.
Look at that beautiful CSS IntelliSense, Scott.
Because what happened was you've got HTML, then you've got C#, and then you're back in HTML inside of an anonymous object. It got out of control.
But over here, ooh.
So he's got CSS IntelliSense, B for Bootstrap, by the way. That's kind of cool. BS callout warning.
But the point of this is, with Tag Helpers, the goal here is to basically bring back HTML, let you have the full power of our HTML, our CSS editors that we built all these years, and not leave you in C# land, but still give you all the same benefits you got. So when you look at this input ASP4 email, it's actually the equivalent of this HTML.txt box.
That was actually kind of cool. Do that alt-tabby thing again. Do it again. That's cool. Yeah, you can see the switch. It's way clearer. And notice that ASP4 is purple, but class equals is not, because only that ASP dash part is there. And that prefix is also, and then he's getting IntelliSense as well for his
model. I still get IntelliSense. I don't lose.
The hyphen as well, the ASP hyphen, that is configurable as well, is it not?
Yeah.
So in the deep dive, we're going to talk about how to make your own. And this is going to mean that you can start creating, whether it be Bootstrap or other things that make you happy, make forms much, much, much faster. Just write HTML and then go and sprinkle these throughout. So it is not run at server, but they do render on the server, but they're forward only, so they're very, very fast.
That's it. I think we just want to recap there and talk about, we talked about performance.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about having your framework in a folder,
mm-hmm.
being able to ship your framework as part of your application, being able to put your app on a server and not affect any other applications.
We may have like 1 second.
We talked about Bower, using open source projects like Bower, Gulp, Grunt.
Let me talk about this real quick.
Go for it.
So apologies to anyone who may be vegan or vegetarian, but this is a great example from Damian Edwards called How Do You Like Your Steak in the context of ASP.NET. There's well done, right? It's buy Visual Studio, use Visual Studio, use NuGet. No problem. You're not going to die because you're eating a well-done steak. You can move your way from medium well through medium. How rare do you want that steak? Do you want to be doing daily builds of ASP.NET? Do you really want to get involved in community? Or do you want it to be blue? But that blue is where you could still bring the cow back to life. Build it from the source, third-party forks of ASP.NET, right? You decide. So what changes for you and your company with open source and ASP.NET 5? If you like well done, nothing changes. Same quality, same and better scalability, great productivity. But if you want to get involved, you've got a whole host of choices all the way down to and including source code or third-party forks, because we don't know what people are going to do.
No.
It's pretty cool.
That's the game.
So, shoot.
We left those slides out.
I left those slides out. Let's all go into my your email. Did she send you those emails? Do you have those slides?
I don't have the slides.
Crap. Let's go and search for those. I'm gonna Google with Bing. Azure Con, because I'll totally find it. Where Sweden is not spelled like that. There is going to be an Azure, I think it's an Azure Roadshow. What's it called? Where's my friends from the local? Oh, I feel so ashamed. And we're recording it too. Is it this one? I'm just randomly picking websites. I have no idea what's going on.
But we do have an Azure Roadshow that's starting up.
Shoot! Ah, I feel bad. That's Japanese.
Do this. Turn off.
Blank that out for me, person. He's going to check his email. Okay. I'm going to entertain the crowd. We're 3 minutes over, though. Da, 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 da. So there is an Azure roadshow that is coming here in Sweden that is going to be, I think that it's going to be 1,000 people or perhaps more. But I understand, I was told that the tickets are selling out. And I think they're free, but they're selling out. You want to make sure that you register. So he's going to run into his email real quick and bring those slides up. We promised our friends we would add those slides, so we're going to make sure and we do that. No pressure. Did you find the slides?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you actually going to paste them in? Azure Tour. That was the word. Okay. Switch it back. Let's pretend that that never happened. So important that we didn't forget. Azure Tour, Stockholm. It's going to be on the 18th of November. aka.ms/AzureTourStockholm. Go and sign up before the tickets are gone. And we're going to have all sorts of AzureCon type content. And of course, today I'm going to be talking about
Azure 101.
So we'll do kind of a 101 just like we did here, minus you. You don't get to come. But check this out, aka.ms/AzureTourStockholm. Thank you very much for spending your hour with us, and I apologize we went a few minutes over. And I hope we have fun all day and tomorrow. Thank you.